What's up, everybody, and welcome to Shell and Tell, where all we talk are Terp sports with a dose of BS opinion. I'm your host, Fred Donahue, joined as always by my co-host, Ryan Schammel. Ryan, what's going on, brother?
So excited to get episode two here on the mics.
Sir.
Can't thank people enough for all the support we got. We got people retweeting. We got people direct messaging us, emailing us, all the ways we actually to reach out for us. And it really helps encourage us and helps get this out in front of more people to listen to.
It really does, man. Can't thank you guys enough. It means the world to us. And can't thank Dino Tomlin enough for taking the time to go into our offensive preview episode. Give us a little insight as to what his experience has been like as an incoming freshman this year. So appreciate Dino taking the time. On this week's episode, we got some former players and coaches in the news landing on their feet. So we got some things to talk about there. Some big recruits visiting campus this weekend and claim to be bringing some friends with them. Some things to be excited about with that for sure. We're also going to shed some light on the basketball team as all but one freshman have reported to campus and some Terps have been in the news on and off the court. So definitely some things to talk about with them as well.
And as promised on episode one, we'll be getting deep into the defensive preview this week. Yeah. A little bit more difficult to break down. Offense got some stars, pretty obvious. Defense got some big names out there on watch lists, but there's a lot more people that could be big news and could just disappear into the depth chart.
Absolutely. And before we get too started with anything, if you're a first-time listener, take a second, go back and listen to episode zero. It's an intro episode Ryan and I put together to kind of give you a little bit of insight as to who we are, why we decided to start this podcast, kind of our goals and aspirations for where we want to bring this thing to. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to episode one's where we do our offensive preview, obviously joined by Dino Tomlin as well, as he kind of talked a little bit about his the whole experience and why he chose Maryland and his recruiting process. It was a lot of fun talking to Dino, for sure.
Well, that's enough with the introductions. In the news, we have a couple names that divide Terrapin Nation. We got the former head coach, DJ Durkin.
Yeah.
DJ Durkin has been mentioned with the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons as a, quote, guest coach.
Yeah, that was the first thing that jumped off the page to me when I saw that. I think this is more so one of those, let's test the waters and see how people react to this thing. You know, I don't think that they're just bringing him in as a consultant, any, or, you know, kind of role. I think it's more so, well, if people don't make too much of a stink about it, we'll go ahead and just slide you into a full-time coaching role.
And he's already been through the Nick Saban coaching rehab down there. He got brought in as an off-field assistant by Nick Saban almost immediately after getting kicked off the Terps.
Right, which is funny because both him and Loxley were on the staff down there in Alabama at the same time.
Yeah, not on-field coaching, but he definitely was listed as one of their off-field consultants. And this is a similar role. It's on-field, but again, this guest coach listing, which could turn pretty permanent pretty quickly. They have a long history going back with the head coach to the days at University of Florida for DJ Durkin. The next person that's been in the news is Mr. Cortez Knight. So Cortez Knight had put in for an immediate eligibility waiver to play for Kent State. It originally came out that the NCAA denied his allegations, saying that he did not provide proof of harm or negative things happening to him. And he had 30 days to appeal. Apparently they won that appeal. It finds interesting timing as Big Ten Media Day, where our Terps were dressed to the nines.
Yes,
showing
were,
off
for sure.
So Mr. Jim Harbaugh, obviously a big face of the Big Ten right now, got in a little hot water discussing coached up versions of depression and homesick and things like that. He kind of inferred that you could easily fake these real medical psychiatric issues.
Kind of how like players fake injuries to get injury timeouts on the field. I mean, that's something that happens all the time.
Which is, yeah, probably coached by him on a pretty regular basis.
Exactly.
So it's, you know, I'm the Cortez Knight, best wishes to him. Glad he gets to play. But it did seem like the NCAA's timing felt like a Band-Aid to put over the our coaches don't believe that mental health is real thing going in the news. And then all of a sudden their mental health case immediately gets pushed through and, oh, you win your appeal. We believe you.
Well, see, I think the easier way to make this whole thing go away is instead of drawing this like very hazy line in the sand that nobody seems to understand with it, just make it a clear-cut rule that every player has the opportunity to transfer out of a school one time throughout their career in college. You get a chance. If you know what, you go, you select a university, you're not happy with the way things are going there, you get a one, no questions asked, no need for approval, transfer out. If you can arrange that and the other university accepts you in, then you don't have to go through this whole approval process. You don't have to worry about somebody faking depression or not faking depression. It all goes away.
Yeah, and I want to make this very clear. We are not saying that Mr. Cortez is faking depression.
No, not at all.
I just find the NCAA's decision as a convenient time for them.
It's just the fact that they have to go through all of this.
Yeah, this shouldn't happen. Like you said, why does the NCAA have rights to pry into someone's medical background?
Right.
Why is someone, you have your HIPAA rights that protect you from having to expose your employers, your family, anyone doesn't have the right to even know that you're seeking psychiatric treatment because of the stigmas that do exist in America with mental health. But the NCAA surpasses that and bypasses and places judgment on it. So yeah, a rule like you're saying with a one time could block a lot of that. You don't have to say what's going on.
Right.
I mean, we already have one transfer that was approved for hardship, Sean Savoy, that right. has gone through, and his was very public reasons that was not very, secretive of why he was trying to transfer. That was all very public with his brother dying, with his mother being sick. But then we also have the transfer of Keandre Jones that we'll get into later,
right.
which nobody really knows why. And it's none of our rights to know why. Well, and that's kind of part of it.
And mental health is one of those things that it's been very kind of behind the curtain for a long time. A lot of people don't like to talk about it. A lot of people don't like to admit that they're suffering and they're going through these things. So a lot of times people that suffer from these things go undiagnosed. So why is it right? Why does the NCAA have that authority and that power, the almighty NCAA, to say, you know what? We don't think your depression's real. So nah, we're going to go ahead and nix this.
If you're a starting quarterback, then your depression's always real and you always get approved to transfer.
Right, exactly. It's absurd. But you know what? Let's move on. Let's talk some positive news, man. We got big recruits visiting campus this weekend. Claim to be bringing some friends with them. They got a cookout going on. It's held by Loxley over the weekend of July 27th.
It's an invite only for all their 2020 and a few 2021 outstanding recruits. And all the commitments have apparently committed to be there. Ruben Hippolyte put out on Twitter that he would be there this weekend. He's our Nick Cross of the 2020, the guy that's trying to be the face of the Maryland movement.
Flying up the rankings nationally as far as other universities being interested for him, too.
Huge offers everywhere. He still stays steady, committed to the Terps.
I love it.
Says he wants to build his brand. Says he wants to be the best linebacker to ever play at Maryland. And I really hope that is one of his goals, and that would, hopefully help fend off some of the crazy high programs where he would just be in the discussion as the greatest ever.
Right.
And at Maryland, he can come try to be the greatest ever.
And a guy like him, if he says he's bringing guys with him, they're going to be some pretty good athletes. I don't think he's just bringing guys to bring guys.
And he's not bragging. If he's not bragging on a, unrated or a three-star, he's saying he's bringing some dogs with him.
Right.
So he's made a little of this public, saying, bring my boys and things. And then also we saw some from the insider Terp sites that I'm sure a lot of you are part of, that first on Twitter he was asking for people that follows him's Xbox codes or Xbox names, and then
I love it.
So he's engaging, and from engaging behind the scenes with him and him retweeting some of my stuff and some of the show's things, he is very personable and can believe this happened. And then a couple of people have said they were talking to him on Xbox Live while playing, and he's truly stating, even in these individual conversations, I'm bringing dogs with me. We're going to be okay. They're just not ready to put it out there yet.
Shout out to the guys at Young Terps podcast who ended up sitting down with Ruben.
Great interview.
Great, great interview. Well done, guys.
Very strong to pull in Hippolyte this early. That's great.
For sure, man. It's awesome that he's willing to take the time to talk to other people about the whole process and his excitement about coming to the university.
It's
man.
Great. The number of guys that just want to be at Maryland,
right.
even, you know, obviously they're saying they could be saying the right things that they could disappear, but the reasonings behind it and the little things that I've heard, like, you know, Ruben with being, I want to be the greatest ever.
Right.
And with, Ebony Jackson who said that his dad was in DC until he was like 3. So it's really his hometown, even though he's grown up in Georgia.
Right.
I think that's who it was. One of the Georgia boys. So it was like confusing because he's like, that's my hometown school, but he's lived in Georgia from what everybody knows, but he was born here
right.
and he wants to be here. So just that's the key with Locks right now, I think, is he doesn't want to be in the news of people decommitting, people flipping. So I think his commitments right now are guys that want to be here and will weather the storm. And then as we get some wins under our belt, maybe we get those bigger names that need some convincing.
Well, speaking of big names, another guy that's going to be at this cookout event is a guy I know you're pretty high on, wide receiver target Rakim Jarrett, who's currently committed to LSU, but has Maryland and Tennessee still kind of in the weeds hanging out there.
Yeah, still definitely in the run. I mean, obviously, you know, not all commitments are created equal, and every school hopes that all the commitments to them are written in stone and all commitments to everyone else are, you know, flexible little plastic.
Right.
But we were definitely in the conversation. Obviously, LSU's been in the news recently with their multi-million-dollar locker room that just came in.
But did you see the picture that they put on Twitter side by side with the new locker room and then the library?
Oh yeah, the library with the running water underneath the wall.
Yeah, and the missing drywall.
Well, you know, that doesn't shock me. We just lost to LSU in the tournament to a team that was paying their basketball players. So
right.
I can't imagine that there's not more negative news coming around LSU.
And Eric Reed, you know, the safety at out of Carolina, he went to LSU and he had said on Twitter, he said, even when he played there years ago, that locker room at LSU was far superior to any locker room he's ever been in the NFL.
And they upgraded all that again.
Right, exactly. But they can't pay the players or compensate the players in any kind of way.
I'm sure they just can't afford it. There's no way.
Got to cut somewhere. But we got another guy. Has McDougal announced where he's going yet? I know he still had us down in his top five.
Yeah, he put us down in the top five. That's all he's done. Hasn't really even announced a date for anything. But he was supposed to be here this weekend for the cookout. Again, invite only, and he was one of the invites. You know, obviously from our talking, we are recording this pre-cookout. It will be released on August 1st, so maybe you guys know some stuff we don't.
Right.
But as of right now, that's what we know is who's invited, not who's shown up, not who committed at it. Hopefully we see some wall gifts.
Right.
You guys get to be like, haha, they didn't know that on Friday.
All right, man. Well, let's talk a little bit about the defenses. That's what this episode is going to be geared around. This is our defensive special. So, and looking at the defense, it's a little bit more difficult to analyze statistics because they don't really show the whole effect. In our last episode, we talked with the offense, and it's pretty clear-cut. You know, when they're putting up stats, when they put up numbers, it pretty much paints the picture for what you can kind of expect from these guys going into next year.
Yeah, the way I like to look at it is the defense as a whole is kind of like the offensive line. Like,
right.
You cannot win a game without an offensive line.
Right.
But evaluating an offensive line is extremely difficult. Where with the running backs and the wide receivers, it's pretty clear cut. I mean, now you get those few cases where you have the DJ Moore that didn't have anybody to throw him the ball, so it was a little bit more difficult to evaluate. But for the most part, it's clear.
Well, you had mentioned earlier Big Ten Media Day, and one of the three guys that was there for Big Ten Media Day, Antoine Brooks, he comes in as one of the higher-rated defensive backs in the country as he's in the watch for the Bednarik Award. Now, what's going to be hard to gauge with him this year is, and that's one of the things that makes defensive stats so hard to really judge a player's production by, is a lot of quarterbacks probably just won't throw his way.
That happened. There's a lot of talk about Tino Ellis did not get a high target percentage because of that same thing last year.
Right.
There were a few stats that I found that kind of showed the cream did rise to the top. So when I like to look at defense, like look at solo tackles, interceptions, and tackles for loss or sacks. These are all big plays that can really change. Well, the tackles just shows you're in the right place at the right time.
Right.
The rest of it is big plays that can change the game. And there were a few names that kept popping up. So what I did was I did a top five of those three categories. So the three names that showed up across all three categories, or two out of three were on all three categories. Antoine Brooks, who is, again, the Bednarik Award,
right,
which is why he's on that list because he's showing up. Antoine Richardson, who would have been our starting safety had he not torn his ACL in the spring.
Right.
And Tino Ellis. So two of the three names that showed up in multiple categories there were our representatives of Big Ten Media Day for that reason.
Right. And Tino spoke a little bit about his transition because he's obviously a wide receiver in high school. And coming from the wide receiver position to the defensive back position in college, it was a pretty easy transition for him because he knows how a wide receiver thinks and he can jump routes a little earlier than maybe the average defensive back because he played on that side of the ball. And I thought that was an interesting take from him.
Yeah, you studied the footwork more in depth on that side. You knew what you're doing to deceive the cornerback. So if you're seeing that and you used to do that move, then you can know how to adjust to that move.
I mean, he led the team in pass breakups last year. So, I mean, his kid's ceiling, I mean, he's really high.
Yeah. Again, surprisingly, he led the team in pass breakups. He only had one interception with, I think, 11 pass breakups, a lot of pass breakups.
Yeah.
As a wide receiver, I think that number will come up, especially if they have to throw his way a little bit more. The top four of the interceptions all left our program last year.
Right.
You had 5 interceptions for Savage, who's playing for the Packers, 4 for Davis, 3 Cowart, who's also now in the NFL. So they're... I've said that wrong. 5 for Watson, 4 for Savage, 3 for Davis, and 2 for Cowart. So 3 people playing the NFL, that's a good reason to lose people.
Well, I think Brooks and Tino Ellis will absolutely help with making up for that production that we're going to lose. One guy that I don't know where they're going to end up lining this guy up, a guy that transferred in from Virginia Tech, Sean Savoy. He came in as a DB playing in spring ball. I mean, he played wide receiver at Virginia Tech, but they had him on the defensive side in the spring game.
Yeah.
Now, apparently there's talks that they're moving him back to wide receiver.
So he was a breakout at the freshman year at Virginia Tech. Brought him in after, again, we talked already about the waiver, and they immediately moved him to defensive back. We all thought it was because we're pretty heavy at wide receiver, especially young wide receivers. We have a ton of sophomore wide receivers. I believe it's 9 on the roster. So I thought they were putting him on that side. They now played him all the way through spring ball at DB, and very first day of camp moved him back to wide receiver. Personally, I think that lends me to believe that Josh Jackson is closer to the starting position than not, because Josh Jackson would have been his quarterback
right
at Virginia Tech. So do you want to give him that security blanket early if you already are seeing him distance himself from Pigram? We have nothing to base it on because, again, we went to the spring game and he wasn't there yet, and we didn't even get to see Pigram play, so we don't even know what Pigram looks like. So,
right.
But, again, conspiracy theory in my head, why did they make the switch all of a sudden after being so sure? Makes me feel like Josh Jackson's clearly going to be the starting quarterback.
Now, another familiar name in the defensive back tandem, a guy that we're familiar with here in Baltimore, Rashad Lewis, son of Ray Lewis. He played in all 12 games last year, also played a role in the return game a little bit. Well, hopefully we'll see the next step out of this kid. What are you expecting out of Rashad?
Rashad played really well last year, played in all 12 games, also played a little bit in the return game. So be interesting to see whether he continues to play in the return game or if we get more of our depth at running back involved. Interesting fact I found while looking at last year, totally unrelated to our players now, but the longest punt return last year was by Jesse Anabodum, our defensive end, because it was on a block and score.
That's right.
The block and score was only 26 yards long. So block and score doesn't always shock you as the longest, but 26 doesn't even seem like a good, I mean, it's a good return, don't get me wrong, but there's plenty of punt returns that don't go to the house that are much longer than 26 yards. You haven't even got back to the lineman at that point.
Right. Now, another guy that I'm kind of excited about, a guy that I think we haven't seen a whole lot out of yet, but could make a big impression on this year's team, Deion Jones. He's a redshirted sophomore, 6 foot, 197 pounds. He was actually the number one cornerback in Maryland, the number 14th cornerback in the nation coming out of high school. So this kid's highly regarded. Haven't seen him much on the field, but I think we could see a lot out of him in this coming season.
I mean, you always got to love having the number one player in Maryland. That's what we talked about with Nick Cross. That's why I was so excited to flip that after signing day. Not even after, early signing day, but after signing day.
Right.
So we got a bunch of people that have that claim on here. You know, between the transfers, we have multiple years of the number one player at Maryland, whether they came directly in or whether we had to wait a while and they float around some other programs and come on home. But there's a bunch of people on this list that I didn't realize that were at least rated number one on one of the rating sites. Of course, there's always some difference on Rivals or Scout versus 247, all that stuff.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about another position. Let's talk a little bit about linebackers. Now, I know Trey Watson on social media the other day mentioned Antoine Brooks in the sense that he should be up for linebacker awards as well because this guy plays all over the field. Obviously, there's some question marks at linebacker. I think this is one of the positions that could either be really, really good or could be a hole in this defense depending upon these transfers. And we know the guy, Shaq Smith, coming in from Clemson, he's 100% go. He's been approved. But Keandre Jones, a transfer from Virginia Tech, they haven't given us the green light on this guy yet. It seems like he's just out there in limbo.
Yeah, there's been a lot of mystery surrounding him. Some people thought he was going to be a grad transfer because he is getting close to the end of his year. He will only have 1 year of eligibility, whether it is this year or whether it is 2020. But at this point, we're waiting on a waiver. It's the only way he could come in this year. And we really need him this year because
For sure.
We only really had one stable aspect of the linebacker core last year. And that was Isaiah Davis. Yeah, 6'1", 245 senior. Junior year, he was second in the team in tackles, third in the team in tackles his sophomore year. So he's definitely been a consistent producer. So he will be in that starting lineup.
His brother Sean played for the Terps. I think he's out in Pittsburgh playing for the Steelers now.
Yeah, 2012, 2015, he was a Terp. Apparently, he sends his game film to him a lot to get some feedback and see how
Smart.
He can improve. You know, got to use your contacts there. Shaq Smith's another one of those guys, like we talked about when he came out of high school. Five-star prospect, second-team All-American, number one player in Maryland. So we just keep stacking up these number one players in Maryland. We got to keep them.
Right, and you can't undervalue what Shaq Smith and Keandre Jones would mean to this, not just to the linebacker core, but to this defense as a whole. They came from two very, very good programs in Clemson and Ohio State, two of the best coaches in the nation with Urban Meyer and Dabo Sweeney. So they've got a lot of experience in that sense, and to bring that to a younger team like this could really speak volumes.
Yeah, and Locks has mentioned that a lot, that they are already bringing some of the, this is the small things you have to do, the leadership roles.
Right.
And whether Keandre Jones plays this year or not, he is listed on the roster, and he is participating in practice, and he is helping these younger, unproven linebackers that have a couple here. Chance Campbell was the most obvious player to come in. He did not play a lot last year, but he played in 11 games. He had offers from Harvard, Navy, Michigan State, Pitt. When I hear that, I'm thinking smart kid. It's a real smart kid. You don't get offers from
definitely
Harvard,
not from Harvard.
From Harvard or Navy. Right. Navy is very difficult school to get into when you're talking, you know, playing for them. So that could be your future middle linebacker, your guy that's calling the defense there, the guy that's arranging everything,
right,
and have a full grasp on the play call. So I'm looking forward to his future. Maybe it's this year, or maybe he's just a really big part of the 2020 class. That was the big thing I saw. But really, I mean, the linebackers are coached by John Puchis and Brian Williams. They should call up Matt Barnes, hire him, and fire him again because they left this they left this cover bare.
Yeah,
I mean. Behind them, there's not a lot. I mean, you got a bunch of walk-ons. We got Ayinde Eli, 6'3", 227, redshirt sophomore. He played in all the games last year, reserve player, had a fumble recovery versus OSU, an interception at Bowling Green. I mean, again, Shaq Smith and Keandre Jones, they were really reserve players there, too. Shaq Smith, 10 snaps a game on average, played in all 15 games because they got to play a little longer than we got to. And Keandre Jones was about that same thing. He only totaled 29 tackles, but he did have a sack, a pass breakup, and a punt block for a safety. So when he got out there, he produced.
And I think that was a big part of the appeal, not just only coming home and playing for your home school, but obviously they could come in here and be starters and stars day one on this defensive squad. Now, I think you bring up a good point. If Jones doesn't get the go-ahead this year, we could see Antoine Brooks, again, kind of in that almost hybrid role where almost kind of if you compare it to
linebacker.
Yeah, if you compare it to somebody on the Ravens, kind of like an Anthony Levine, where Anthony Levine kind of lines up in multi facets and on the defense, we could see Antoine kind of in that same role. But I really do hope that Keandre Jones gets a chance because I'd love to see those two guys on the field. I think they could wreak havoc.
Yeah, I tweeted out this week, I just, NCAA, stop holding us back. Let Locke show you what a real rebuild looks like, show what redemption is, because I think that's a big linchpin. Because again, we do have some players, but they're going to a 3-4, and I'm only seeing three obvious starters, and then I guess the fourth would be Eli. We need some depth there. You can't run all day, and you can't just depend that no one's going to get injured. This is football,
right?
So really, really need Keandre Jones to get cleared
now. On the defensive line, this is a position where I feel like we have a lot of veterans. I don't feel like we have a ton of talent, but we have a lot of guys that have been in the system, a lot of guys that have been around for a long time. I do think that we see the Gaddy twins take the next step because they, not trying to put blame out there or anything like that, but I think they underwhelmed a little bit in their first year. Maybe it was a little bit much for them coming in as freshmen, but I think this year will be a big, big step up for them coming in.
Well, I'm a big fan of twins, as a father of twins.
For sure.
Recruit eligible 2035 for my girls, just in case the Terps are out there listening. but the Gaddy twins, definitely 6'2", 306, 334 for Brandon and Brayon.
Super athletic kids, man, for being so big.
Redshirt sophomores doing backflips and cartwheels out there in their videos. It's crazy to be 334 doing a cartwheel or a backflip. That's super, super athletic.
And Brayon, again, kind of coming in with all the high expectations, he was getting recruited by some big, big schools outside of Maryland.
Yeah, the big difference I see in these two groups, because people are really down on our defensive line, I'm not as scared of that because we have no proven commodities, but we have all depth of potential.
Right.
At the linebacker core, we have some potential, but it's only at the top. Everyone's got potential and they're being coached up. And I am so excited to see this weight training staff getting a hold of these guys and being real public about it. And they see like they're enjoying themselves and they're getting into it. So all these unrated players, because ratings don't always mean something. You got J.J. Watt was a 2-star, so they can come up and surprise us, and I really hope they do. I hope I listen at the end of the year, and I'm an idiot, and I don't know anything, and there were three people I didn't put on this list that became our starters, and they had 13 sacks apiece. That'd be great. I just don't see it happening. On the defensive line, anybody on this list I could see doing that to me. They all had high expectations coming out of high school, and they just haven't quite got there at this level, but that takes time when you're a big man.
Now, one kid that played above expectations, I think he played a little out of his mind last year, and I'm going to try this name. This name's crazy. Olawosan Oluwatimi?
We'll go with that.
Yeah, sure. Senior 6'1", 294. He was actually a walk-on and won the coaching staff award for best defensive lineman last year.
And he played at DeMatha for Coach Brooks. Coach
right.
Brooks isn't coaching the defense, but he is part of the coaching staff now, coaching the running backs. So hopefully he can, again, I called the cheat code last week to know what really fed that fire in high school and got them, where they are. Brett Kolka, 6-year senior, so some leadership. So he got a red shirt.
Been in college a long time.
Yes. So he's a grown man playing against some 18-year-olds, so hopefully that'll help out. He's 6'4", 259. He'll compete for a DN spot after being injured game 4 last year, so that's why he got that medical red shirt.
Right.
When you were talking about a name you were going to try and a guy playing over his head, I thought you were going to a different location, so I'm going to try the next one. Sam Okiyayuninu.
Heyo.
Hey, I probably messed that up real bad, and it was definitely too slow.
We're going to call
him
Sam
better.
Okay.
Sam Okay, 6'3", 270. He is a JUCO transfer. Locks reach into the junior college world. So
he had some crazy
numbers.
Yeah,
this is what I'm saying. Playing over his head is exactly where I started going. JUCO, Superman, with 62 tackles, 21.5 for a loss, and 17.5 sacks. If you're playing against fifth graders, that's putting in work.
For sure. Now, a kid that I've got a little bit of hope for, and he's young, obviously coming in as a freshman, Harlem Alexander, a redshirted freshman, 6'4", 300 pounds. Talk about having some offers from some big colleges. This guy had offers from Oklahoma, Georgia, Auburn. He was a 10th overall rated player in Virginia. Very athletic for, again, his for a guy his size. This could be a guy that could potentially be playing for some starting minutes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his size, you can't teach that. He's very young, redshirt freshman. But this is the reason this list is like this, because all these guys have serious potential. Nobody has just stepped up and been like, this is my spot. And, you know, at the defensive line, you don't really need to. Think the Eagles a couple years ago. They ran four or five guys into those two positions and just rotated and kept them fresh. So, and in college especially, with these big guys and putting in the work training, you got to keep them fresh. Cam Spence is another young guy, redshirt sophomore, 6'3", 300 pounds. He didn't play any games, but high school, top 25 D lineman in the USA, number 3 player in D.C., offers from Penn State, Florida State, Florida, Auburn. So again, he didn't even play last year, but right. I still would not be surprised if he leads us in sacks or if he ends up being, you know, starting 8 to 10 games. That's what this the defensive lineman is about. It's not that we don't have anyone. It's that we don't know who it is.
They haven't scratched the surface yet. We got a lot of guys that have the potential, a lot of guys that had a lot of high regards in high school. Now they just got to show up. Now they got to put in the work and time to shine, man. When the spotlight comes on, you got to be able to play ball.
And I mean, just in general, talking defense last year, there's a lot of room for improvement. We already talked about the sloppy play. 33 penalty first downs, third worst in the Big Ten last year.
Yikes.
Fourth down efficiency, opponents were 13 for 20, 65%. That was second worst in the Big Ten.
Ugh.
Yeah, second interceptions with 18, but second to the last for sacks at 17.
Which surprised me. I was kind of surprised that we were that low.
It is very strange combination, because usually if you can't get to the quarterback,
right,
then you're – cornerbacks are not going to be able to cover forever, so you're not going to get these interceptions. You need to force the ball out.
Right.
So a weird stat there. And then 18 sacks was 114th nationally, 54 tackles for loss, 122nd. So there is plenty of room for improvement. And again, one of the things that adds to being difficult to breaking this down is I left off some people that just didn't play last year. But that wasn't for this coach.
Right.
Like, there's whole new eyes. So, like, if this was the same coach, that might be a pretty valid way to look at this. And we can't go, obviously, you know, there's too many players to talk about on a college roster. It's too deep. So you have to eliminate some people. But maybe Lox comes in and goes, why were you buried on this depth chart? Why have you not played? Come on out here. So, again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope we hear some names that weren't even on this paper, and they show up and they entertain me from section 7, and me and you are spilling beers on each other, high-fiving.
That's right. So I'm going to put you under the spotlight here for a second. Does this defense statistically rank higher this year than they did last year?
They have to do better. They lost some big pieces.
Lost some real big key pieces.
There also is so much potential. I can't see, with the improvement that I predict on offense, that this defense won't be fresher and they won't get burned for as many big plays and be able to bring some more pressure. So will as many people in this defense end up in the NFL? Probably not. We only got a few names that might. But will this defense perform better? I think because of the overall, and again, a lot of this hinges on our linebacker core.
Right.
With Keandre Jones, yes. Without Keandre Jones, I think they can still do it. It's going to be interesting to see who that fourth linebacker is at that point.
So I kind of take a similar approach to this. I think that the offense and the efficiency of the offense is going to play a large part of effect of how good this defense is. And I equate that to a similar situation, what's going on with the Ravens, right? I talk on my Birdland BS show a lot about the hashtag Lamar effect and how Lamar being on the field, extending drives, keeping the play clock moving, keeps the defense fresh, keeps the defense off the field. I think we're going to see a shift in that with this Maryland football team as well. I think we're going to see an offense that likes to move the ball on the ground, that likes to do short dump off passes, easy, high completion percentage, staying in bounds, where we're going to see a lot of first downs and we're going to see a lot of time running off the clock, which will then in turn keep the defense off the field longer, keep them fresher for, you know, longer throughout the game, which hopefully then will speak better statistics for them.
And again, can't talk enough about the work in the weight room they're putting in.
For sure.
And talk about work in the weight room. Right before I got here, I saw a picture of this men's basketball team on their final day of summer workouts. Man. You see this?
It looked photoshopped.
It absolutely looked photoshopped. These boys are looking 300 level fit.
I mean, they're not putting on the, you know, the keg pack like I've got, but these guys had 8 packs, 12 packs. I mean, it's ridiculous the shape these guys are in.
Yeah, and you know what? It really made me think that I underestimated how young these guys were.
Right.
Like, how well they played with boy bodies, with high school training. Like, yeah, there are some guys coming out of high school that just got it. Ruben Hippolyte is a grown man going into his senior year of football.
Right.
And LeBron James was grown at 13.
Yeah, for sure.
But there are people that develop through college like crazy. Even the average person. I probably grew 2.5 inches in college. So these guys are growing 5 inches on their biceps, 4 inches on their calves.
Yeah, we saw some pictures of Jalen Smith, man. He, again, a guy that had the nickname of Sticks, looks like he's been hitting the weight room real tough.
Oh, he's completely tore up. The one thing that I will go with Sticks, why is he still at 0% body fat while doing this?
And don't skip leg day, bro.
Well, no, he's still, his legs are looking a lot better than they were. I cannot go to on his weight training. That's unbelievable. But is there a way to add more calories, this man? Because it is not a problem for a big man to have some cushion around that muscle. You can see every line of sinew and muscle fiber and tendon as he's flexing these monsters he's building over
there. Yeah, man. It's exciting to see. You know, a couple of guys that have been playing ball together this summer, Aaron Wiggins and Anthony Cowan. We got a chance to see them play a little bit in, it looked like some AAU style tournament that they played in, which I was kind of surprised that they played in. But there's been a lot of chatter around these guys, a lot of NBA buzz with these two. What are your expectations for these two going into this year?
Yeah, apparently this was Wiggins' AAU team that he's played with for years, and he invited Cowan to come play for him with the summer. Very, very cool. They're playing together, getting some more work in.
Yeah.
Obviously they would plan on playing a lot of minutes together. We talked, I think it was on Birdland BS actually, about how Wiggins only played 1.5 minutes less a game than Daryl Morsell last year.
Right.
So he was a de facto starter. Yes, six man, but you know, when you're 90 seconds off one of the starters, you're a starter. So there's been a lot of, NBA buzz on Wiggins because of his 3-point percentage, mm-hmm. how well he shot from that last year, and his overall ability and being the young gun. The awards list, however, are looking more at the Cowan and Jalen Smith. Of course, Jalen Smith also has the NBA suitors. Cowan
potentially a lottery pick.
Yeah, but Cowan not so much on the NBA thing yet, but I still think he'll be able to play pro ball somewhere.
He might be over there in Australia with Melo.
Yeah. It might be in the G League. You might go play with Melo again. That's a good one. I like. Let's, you know, we got the Terps of Atlanta. Maybe we can have the Terps down under too.
Let's
do
go
it all.
Down under.
Terps takeover taking a whole new meaning.
Well, a couple of guys that are newcomers coming in this season, I think we can hang our hats on, get excited about. Two Twins. Obviously, the common bond that you have with the Twins.
I'm so excited. Mitchell Twins, Gaddy Twins, bring them all in. And Shamel Twins, recruit eligible 2035, as earlier mentioned.
And Makai Mitchell being the higher regarded. You know, both these guys, 6'9", 225, 230, very similar in size, was a 4-star recruit, a banger down low, guy that likes to get on the glass, guy that can put up some numbers, very physical. I think there's a lot to be excited about with these two guys.
Yeah, we got Makai Mitchell will definitely be in the running for the starting center position, especially with Troll still not reporting to campus. Troll Mariel, our last signing, 7'2". He has decided to stay with his medical team and his coaching staff until classes start. So he is the one freshman that's not on campus. So with him getting a late start, Jalen Smith and Mekhi Mitchell will be our two people looking at starting center. And obviously, we would love to see them both on the court. A little power forward action being bigger than most men on the field or court.
And another kid that's coming in that I don't think gets enough notoriety, a three-star small forward, could be play a little bit of shooting guard as well. 6'6", Dante Scott out of Philadelphia. This is a kid put up some pretty decent numbers in high school, ended up being the 4A player of the year in the state of Pennsylvania. I think there's a lot to be excited about with this kid, too.
Yeah, the Terps got back into Philadelphia, which is a good recruiting grounds, both with Dante Scott and with Hakeem Hart.
Yep.
So we're trying to get back in that Philadelphia market. Hakeem Hart, 6'5", 185, shooting guard, late signee, again, out of Philadelphia.
This kid had really nobody on his radar, and then all of a sudden grew 6 inches over summer and was on everybody's radar.
Yeah, and his shooting percentage kept up. So as long as that's true and we can get a little spot shooter action out of him, he'll be worth the scholarship.
For sure. And as you mentioned, Chole Merrill, this is a guy that could really put us over the top. If he can come in, stay healthy, to have a guy of this size, 7'2", but he's got the wingspan of like a 7'8" guy. I mean, his wingspan's ridiculous.
I think it was 7'11". It was
or 7'11".
Yeah,
wow.
It was longer than anyone in the NBA. I know that for sure.
The only issue that we have here with him is obviously the injury history. He's dealing with some shin splints, and I've dealt with those in my life. They are no fun, and it's not something that goes away easily, and there's really not a whole lot you can do to rehab it. It's just time. So hopefully he's had enough time and he can get in here and get on the court, because I think he adds a totally different dimension and this team will look totally different with him in the roster.
Yeah, I think Turgeon number one was okay with the risk because we do have so many other options. So right. If he just doesn't show up, you also have the Warriors of last year where Boogie Cousins shows up right before playoffs and gives you a whole new look and something that teams have to prepare for. So he could be sitting on the bench all year long and, you know, February you throw Chole Merrill in and it changes the whole offense and all the tape they had on you all year is useless.
Right.
And that could be a really nice thing running into our we never win in February people and our March issues, to just look at this whole new offense we're bringing to you.
Right. Now, another celebration that was going on this past weekend at College Park, I don't know if you got a chance to see this on social media or not, but Jake Lehman tied the knot at College Park this weekend.
I love to see this.
It
love
awesome.
To see the pro Terps, number one, stay involved in any way.
Right.
But to be married in College Park.
Yeah.
Like, and that just shows you're tying your, you know, best day of your life. You're tying some of your greatest memories to College Park. It really shows that these guys enjoyed their time here. It's the whole Bruno Fernando thing where, right, like, he truly and honestly would like believes Maryland changed his life, believe they are the reason that he is where he is.
Right.
And is like, he's made that very clear and very poignant. And to see, again, Jake Lehman getting married on campus, that kind of proves that. Seeing guys that just, they're in town playing against the Redskins or against the Ravens and they're back in the stadium. Like, I just love to see the future engagement, and just for no other reason than the nostalgia of it, because
right,
that's what this is for me. Like, this is, like I've talked about, I have 6 family reunions a year. That's my home games at the Terps.
Right.
Like, this is nostalgia. So to see that they enjoy it as much as I do is huge for me.
And we're starting to see that happen now under the Mark Turgeon era, which, you know, we saw that a lot when Gary Williams was here, not just because of the university, but because these kids looked up to Gary Williams almost as like a father type figure. You know, they loved playing for Gary and they came back to the university all the time. You know, you had your Joe Smiths, your Keith Booths, you know, a lot of guys that played under Gary, your Juan Dixons, that came back and showed their support of the program. And in the first few years that Turgeon was here, you didn't really see that a whole lot, but now we are. So this is definitely a good sign.
A little off script here. Wasn't sure we're going to get into it, but I'm interested to get your take because we haven't talked.
All right.
Saw today, number one, Grievous Vasquez is coaching in the summer league for the New Orleans Pelicans.
Okay. Didn't know that.
We also talked about Steve Blake is now getting his NBA coaching career
with the Suns.
Yeah. So saw an interview with Vasquez. It was asking about his chances of coming back and coaching the Terps. Of course, he was very diplomatic. He said, I think that Mark Turgeon's doing a great job up there. He has the program under control.
Right.
This, that, and the other. Well, the interviewee got to the end of it, and he says, well, I think Vasquez 2030 has a nice ring to it. And, of course, Vasquez says, you know, that really does have a kind of nice ring to it.
I like it.
So it got me thinking, because I've always been a Steve Blake for Maryland head coach. Like that, because he was the prime of Maryland for me growing up, I would love to see that come back.
Right.
Vasquez versus Blake, if that's what the search comes down to, if you hire the consultant that always makes $8 million on a coaching search and they come back with you with the very obvious Vasquez versus Blake, where do you go?
Oh, man, put me on the spot. It's a tough one. I like them both as far as their tenure here at Maryland, both guys that I rooted hard for. I think Blake, he brings the X's and O's. He's going to bring the smarts. I think he's the better basketball mind. I think Gravis Vasquez, he's the better motivator, the better cheerleader. I think players might gravitate towards him and towards his style a little bit more. So if it were me, if I had to pick, I don't think you'd lose one way or the other, but I think Gravis might be the better total overall package.
I get where you're coming from with that. My brain can't get there yet because I've never even considered him. I didn't even realize he was going in that
I thought
direction.
He was still playing.
So he played till 2006. He had an injury-riddled career. Oh, I'm sorry. That's bad. He played till 2016.
Okay.
I guess is what I took a decade off there. Injury-riddled career, never really had a full season. He was always dropping out. And so then now he's getting back into the coaching ranks. And then, of course, Steve Blake had a long career, longer than anyone in that championship team for us, with the Lakers, with all over the place. I kind of expected him this year. I thought he was going to be the next face of the Big Three. He'd go in and dominate that league that I kind of enjoy watching. But then he goes into coaching window, you know, without hesitation. Played last year, coached this year.
I always kind of thought I'd see Steve Blake in a coaching role.
It makes sense. He felt that way on the court. You know,
he's a general.
On court general, field general.
Yep.
So I still would be in that camp, but those are both Gary Williams guys. If you could get both them together, I hate Mark Turgeon guy. This is a future conversation.
Yeah,
Let them build their coaching resume before we bring them back. But I would love to have both of them, and I wouldn't be upset with either one of them being the heir to the Mark Turgeon throne.
Be interesting to see for sure. I think either one of them would be a good candidate down the road for sure. Well, that about wraps it up, man. We're about 45 minutes into this thing. Want to take a second to thank everybody for tuning in this week. If you haven't had a chance yet, make sure you follow us on all of our social media networks. On Twitter, you can follow us at Shell and Tell Pod. You can follow Ryan at Terps_BSPert. That's BSPERT. You can follow me at FredBLBS. Check out our episodes and a little bit about us on our website at www.birdlandbs.com/Shell and Tell. You can find the podcast on all your popular platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and even iHeartRadio now. It's hard to believe that the summer is almost over. Football is here. I can't be more excited. Like, this is like my Christmas time.
This is what we all promised. We were getting into the season. And as well as last episode did, I think we're going to go ahead and commit. We'll be doing bi-monthly shows from here on out. So next episode will be on the 14th of this month.
A Howard preview.
So it'll be first and third Thursdays you will hear from us. That way we have time to get our things in, my Terps games, Fred has Ravens season tickets, and we can record and get to you guys on Thursday.
Yeah, so be sure to be on the lookout for that. Make sure you're sharing everything. Spread the love. Spread the word.
And more importantly than ever, with camp in session and our boys out there working hard every day, here's to wishing all is well under the shell.